Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Everybody, and welcome to the Chilluminati podcast, episode 61. As always, I am one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined by my two co-hosts, Jesse Cox and Alex Fasciane. Hello, boys.
What is up?
What is up?
I don't know, man.
What's good?
A lot is up.
A lot's good. A lot is up. I feel like the past week, like in the paranormal world, shit's popping off again.
What do you mean?
It has been like 7 weeks in a row where there's been like one article that comes out that's like disclosure.
Yeah. It really just, they're just like tinkling and very gently sprinkling into our faces.
It doesn't seem like anything weird to me.
What are you talking about? What do you mean? The article had to be retracted because they said Harry Reid said one thing, but he didn't say another.
On top of that, a bunch of
papers came out. Did you listen to the podcast, the JRE podcast with George Knapp?
Nope.
Fantastic. It was great. I don't really listen to JRE at all, but I listen to his alien episodes because those are the better ones. And George Knapp is fascinating to just listen to talk anyway. Great one. But there's all kinds of new papers that have just been released as well, including the ATIP. But obviously, the official acknowledgement that, yes, they still actually do have a UFO program going on, even though they've been denying it for the past 2 years. Yes, that's still going on. On top of that, in some of the papers, they're doing like implant studies, like biomechanical things that are pulled out of others that they're studying and trying to figure out what the hell they are. So it's just more stuff that's being put out there. It's like, yes, okay, yes, you got us. These are real. We're studying it. We don't know what it is, but we're studying it.
This is... It's getting there. It's still getting there big time.
This is anything.
Listen, if I was still to take,
don't think
like,
it's anything.
My fantasy nerd would love to the whole government to have treaties with the aliens to be true. The realist in me says the government knows as little as we do. Like they're chasing these things and they might know a little more because they have a little bit more like direct footage of them on like their airplanes or whatever. But my guess is they genuinely just don't know. They genuinely don't know what the hell they are. And what the hell they've been doing and why they keep popping up.
I believe that more likely than anything. If I believed any of these things, I would believe that they had no clue rather than like, it's a grand conspiracy.
Right. We're more likely to be. It was one of the things that we've talked about before. What if we're just like an agricultural planet? George Knapp said, like, what if we're just being bred to be like
our whole planet is just like a big ass cow.
Yeah, it's like their planet and we're just like their cows that they just
it's like a meta level of schlorping that we weren't even ready for.
I'm just gonna hand that to you because that was incredible. There's some exciting new merch development. It's been a while since we've had new merch.
Yeah, this is the good stuff now. Guys, we're really on it.
Listen, we know you know us, right? You know us. We like to give you guys what you want in exchange for money. You know what I mean? And we got schlorpins. It's the sound that it makes when you scoop out a cow's butt when you're an alien.
Explain that to your parents when you buy it.
Let them know. Let them know that we thank them in advance for letting you use their credit cards. And if they still have
I didn't tell you, but the majority of our listeners are 27 to 34.
No, those people don't. I'm not thanking them. That's, you know, everybody buys stuff every day. I'm not trying to thank everybody. I'm just saying the kids who we can get at. You know, what?
Really Hollywood thinking here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And if you have any goodwill with your parents left over, head on over to patreon.com/Chilluminati Pod where you can support us every month. Keep this the lights on here at Chilluminati HQ. Not only do you get these fine episodes each and every week now, not only do we have staff researchers, not only do we have merch for you guys all the time, but also even after this episode, every episode that we ever do, you get 15 more minutes of episode right after. More Chilluminati right now. Patreon.com/Chilluminati Pod.
And one last Patreon announcement. We're also going to be adding an additional benefit of a $20 tier. Every month, you're going to get a piece of original digital art poster themed around one of the topics we did starting in August. And I'll let you know right now, the poster is designed around Roswell. With the, the three of us there. It's $20 tier.
Bean Boy. Bean Boy.
The Bean Boy's coming. The Bean Boy's coming, but we got to break
Bean
his story.
Bean Boy's coming in one of the posters.
Somebody's
so that's
got to see the Bean Boy. Yep. We need that story.
Yep, yep. The Bean Boy's slowly spreading. He's working his way onto the internet.
We need that
so
as merch.
Slowly.
We need that as a t-shirt.
We got new t-shirts on the way as well. Chicago we can't really, I don't want to spoil what those are yet because they're still in the works, but that's on the way. Don't you freaking worry.
I'd support
great.
That over Schlorp.
Schlorp pins are great. Go get a Schlorp pin.
It's wiping across the world. You know what I mean? Right, it's a phenomenon.
And if an alien tries to abduct you, they'll see the pin and go, this one's already been Schlorped. And they'll put you back and it'll be fine.
Maybe they'll just check your butt first before.
Maybe. It's possible.
It's a metaphor.
Hey, scoop in your butt. It's a metaphor.
There's a lot going on with the Schlorp pin, and you know it works on a lot of different levels. And really, I think
there
that's
are two
the
colors.
Thing. Yeah.
Do you like pink your Schlorp green, in green or in like a, is it pink or purple? I can't remember which.
It's green and pink.
Yeah. Well, if like you like your Schlorp
like a reddish
in green.
Pink, yeah. I just got mine today.
Pink.
They look freaking great.
You should. I don't know if they sent you Jesse's as well. I think I told them to send them Jesse's to yours with yours.
Oh, now Alex. I gotta hang out with Jesse.
Yeah. Oh, you gotta hang out.
I'll never see that pin. It's lost to me forever.
You're gonna have to slurp it off my butt.
So yeah, go get those pins. Go check out the tier 20. You're gonna have a sweet poster art every month. And we're gonna be the artists we're gonna be sourcing from the community, actually. Everybody who's we're gonna be commissioning people from the community to help design some stuff. So it's some sweet, sweet stuff. Oh, I think that's it for Shillin, right? I think we can dive into this episode. This is it, boys. The finale of the Roswell incident trilogy. A big thank you to Deanna, the assistant researcher who helped me out on this one. And a big happy birthday as well.
Happy birthday, Deanna.
Couldn't have done this without you. Today, we actually get to dive into what I was telling you prior. We finally get to talk a little bit about the fabled MJ-12, the Majestic 12, who they are, if they're real. Now, there's a lot of stories, very fantastical stories about who the Majestic 12 are, but we're going to stick to what we know to be fact, like literal hard physical proof of whether or not they exist, because going into anything other than that just leads into, I mean, we already are kind of veering into did it happen, did it not? Majestic 12 is even more gray than a lot of the Roswell stuff.
Grays? So, is that what you said? It's even more grays?
Grays, potential future humans traveling through space with gravitational engines, propulsion systems, but that's a conversation for another time. On top of that, we're going to talk about the big boom of UFO sightings that really happened throughout the 50s and 60s before it kind of slowed, I don't want to say slowed down, but became a little bit less of a popular topic along the way. And that's it. We're going to leave it there. Obviously, with the theories, we're going to talk all about the theories. Don't worry. So with that said, let's talk about the Majestic 12. Do you know much about the Majestic 12, Alex or Jesse?
I mean, I know roughly what they are. I've never crossed the line into like, you know, true believer status on this, but I know that the Majestic 12 is like, when you say those words, you're like signaling to another fellow conspiracy theorist that you are drinking the big juice.
It's like it's like the next deepest tier within Roswell, because if you believe the Majestic 12 exists or the Magic 12 or the MJ-12, you also have to then believe it's because of Roswell that they exist. It was Roswell, the Roswell event that sparked the creation of this super secret group of a mix of big wigs within the government. Anybody from military to scientific to all kinds of intelligence fields filled out these 12 seats within the super special council.
Yeah, it's like the Iron Man of the Roswell Cinematic Universe. You know what I mean?
It's like, it's like the government Avengers, which is never a good time. but really, that's what they were just, they were plucked from the CIA, NSA, FBI, Defense Intelligence Agency, anything you name that could be a powerful, influential wing of the government. That's where these people ended up coming from. And you might wonder, well, where the hell did this, where did the MJ-12 come from? And that's where, this is why the MJ-12 are even questionably real. They only come from one piece of physical evidence. Only a single piece of evidence exists to help to even suggest their existence. And that was because something emerged in December of 1984. A plain white envelope bearing zero return address, only an Albuquerque, New Mexico postmark, arrived at the home of an LA movie producer by the name of Jamie Chandria.
Chandria and Michelle Obama got one. Hillary got one.
Well, somebody else did get one later on, a few years later. However, it's important to note that this particular director, if you don't know who they are, they were well known at this time, this is the 80s, to have been working with a UFO investigator, Bill Moore. So he was already within the UFO world, which already throws a layer of doubt onto whether this stuff is real. So he gets this envelope, and within it contains the following: a can of black and white 35 millimeter film, which, when developed, revealed 8 pages of purported briefing paper for President-elect then Dwight Eisenhower, dated the 18th of November, 1952. It described the discovery, recovery, and preliminary analysis of what remained from the crash in Corona, New Mexico. This obviously being the crash that we just covered.
Right.
Moore, Chandria, and alongside Stanton Friedman. Now, Friedman is one of the authors of one of the books that we ended up using as a source for these episodes. Then spent 2 years trying to figure out if these documents were real, if there was any validity to them, or if they were just a giant like art project that somebody started to or was doing or something to just try and fool others. Because that's another thing within this world, is like a lot of people are constantly trying to pull one up on other people. However, after those 2 years, they could not conclusively determine if it was a hoax or if it was real. Then another copy of the document ended up emerging. It was sent to an English UFO writer by the name of Timothy Good, who was at the time preparing a book about governmental involvement with UFOs. Though his copy came a few years later in March of 1987. He included it with the book Above Top Secret, which was published in England in May of that year.
That
Moore and Chandria released a censored version of the document in question.
That, to me, is the two facets of ufology.
Yep.
The one where they got the exact same document and they spent 2 years researching it and they're like, well, we don't know what to do with this. We can't prove it's real. And then the other guy's like, I'm putting it in my book.
It's a book. Yeah. He's a UFO researcher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other one's a freaking movie director. But even then, whatever the versions they released were both redacted versions in the first place. Anyway,
do we count as like UFO researchers now?
God, I don't know. Like, I'll be the greatest honor if there's somebody out there who can dub us official UFO researchers.
I don't think that's how it works. Although I think it does. I think you can just say it and you are.
Well, MUFON is fucked. Yeah. They're gone, dude. Did you hear about the tragedy at MUFON?
No.
No.
Oh, the CEO got pulled for basically being a pedo.
Oh,
soliciting sex from a 13-year-old.
God damn it.
So that MUFON is going to go. They need to go. They need to just fucking disappear. Bye.
I can't.
There's an opening for legit UFO people out there now. So maybe the Chaluminati can fill it in.
I at
the
still very least, question Deanna whether legit UFO people is a real thing, but okay.
Sorry, I feel like Deanna counts as a UFO researcher at this point.
Deanna
for sure.
At the very least should count. Yeah, I'm with it. She and we by proxy, sort of.
By proxy? No. Nothing by proxy.
Listen, my tongue like slipped for no reason. It was just like, eh.
It was like a stone.
Don't talk back.
It's like a stone skipping across the water.
It just starts scatting instead of doing the podcast. Okay, moving on. Later on. In 1987. This is the reason MUFON came into my head. In 1987, MUFON had a symposium at the American University in Washington, D.C. Moore and Chandria released the full document, though the lack of verification made it the subject of tons of rumors, denials, and accusations at the symposium. But they released it at least in 1987. The immediate reaction to the Eisenhower briefing was that it was a hoax, citing discrepancies in the form of the document, typeface, official jargon, and so on. So basically, people kind of compared this document to other official documents that had been easily accessible at the time, and nothing really was matching up.
So what you're saying is the guys who spent 2 years researching and found nothing and weren't UFO researchers were in fact smarter than the UFO researcher who threw in his book.
I don't want to say smarter.
If I may retort, they did that all on purpose, Jesse, so that anybody who may have come across the document could then, they could cast doubt on it and disregard it and then therefore hide their existence from the public.
It makes sense. It makes sense. This is why
conspiracy theories are the realm of stupidity.
We could all be dreaming right now, Jesse.
This is why if you dabble in conspiracy long enough, you become a full-fledged idiot.
This could be a dream that we're living in now. You know what I mean?
Don't like, you wake get up. It? Just because you have evidence doesn't mean that's nonsense.
Maybe you went to bed in 1983 and you're just still sleeping. And this is just one.
Every
one
time
night.
You go to sleep in reality your real life, you live
guys.
An entire
reality
fake
subjective.
Dream.
Reality's totally subjective. Doesn't matter. You don't get it, man. Of course, this could be a dream, but I'm still living it.
You know what? I'm with you on that one. So like if we came to the realization going back to aliens that we were just nothing, we were like a freaking agricultural farm people, whatever, man, just let me play my video games and like
do
my podcast.
I've said for years I would be Cypher in the Matrix.
You're dude, just like,
people are just like, wouldn't you want to wake up? Like, what the hell would I care? I'll eventually be dead. I'd rather eat fake mind steak and have
my
like
brain
a fun
is telling
life.
Me it's delicious steak.
If you're gonna use like Uber Eats, if you're gonna use Uber Eats, you might as well go in the fucking Matrix. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you've already broken down society in every way. Like, you've reduced your life to NPC from Death Stranding. So you might as well just go in the fucking Matrix.
Yeah, what the hell do I care? I'm not gonna like, oh no, we got to fight against the robots. So Keanu Reeves can become Jesus. I'd vaporize all of them.
Yeah.
Vaporize every last one. And then they'd be like, damn you, Jesse. And I'd be like, sorry, Trinity. I love steak. Click.
Is it with you? Is it with you that we have the debate about what Switch actually sounds like?
No. What?
Where you're like, she's like a cowboy.
Yes. She, if you watch that movie, every line she says, I don't know what her accent is, but she goes,
no,
damn, she's, you Cypher.
She's like Eastern European or something.
Yeah, this,
she's a cowboy.
Like, not the where my is.
Damn, no, yeah, no, there's not like, damn, damn you Cypher.
No, what she said.
Oh, damn you, Cypher. Get away from them, control Cypher.
Can't believe you sold me out for a steak, Cypher.
Some bitch.
I would have sold them all out for that sweet,
like the people
sweet
who came across the UFO in episode 2. Damn, the aliens. So let's talk a little bit about the document itself, what it contained, and what the discrepancies may or may not have been. Regarding the form specifically, in a letter to private UFO enthusiast Lee Graham, a former CIA official by the name of Richard Bissell, the head of the U2 and Bay of Pigs program, that's right, before, oh God, there's a U2 joke there, and then I immediately forgot the lead singer's name. Oh,
Bono?
So it's gone.
Before Bono?
Yeah, before Bono. It would have been this
edge,
guy.
And
did you say it was on the edge of your tongue?
Yeah, the edge
God damn
of
it.
My tongue.
Freaking Zoom lag got my thunder stolen.
The comedic timing's off.
It fucks you up, dude.
All right, we can move on. We gotta deal with Zoom in these COVID-like times.
It's true.
CIA official Richard Bissell at the time, again, the head of the U2 and Bay of Pigs operations, said, quote, the document certainly looks authentic. On the basis of the material you've sent me, I personally have little doubt that it is authentic. Similar testimony was given to Friedman from Truman administrative assistant David Stowe and from one-time National Security Council planning board member Robert R. Bowie. So on top of the idea that there are people like there's discrepancies, doesn't match a lot of the other legal stuff, there are people who have been within the government, higher ups and whatnot, people who are heads of actual programs that were also the center of conspiracies until they were released, realized to be true, that they said this looks authentic to them, the paper. However, let's talk a little bit about the writing style of the document. The material was allegedly written by Admiral Roscoe Hillenkoetter, who was identified on the second page of the briefing. Though that does not necessarily mean that he wrote the briefing in its entirety. He could have roughed out an outline, had another staffer obviously kind of put it together and basically have an intern do the work, the hard work for them. And funnily enough, as our Deanna does make note, kind of like how the relationship between a researcher and a presenter can work sometime.
You love to see it.
You do love to see it. The briefing was given to linguistics expert Dr. Roger Westcott of Drew University in New Jersey. Shout out Drew University. My brother went there and graduated from there with a drama degree. I don't know if that really matters.
I knew a man named Drew.
I've known a couple same people
thing? Had a drama
Drew.
Degree and yeah. went to university.
Well, that's true. I don't know about Drew University.
A yep, university. And if he was there, wouldn't it have been Drew University?
Mind blown, dude. Boom. I can't handle these truths that you're dropping on.
That's why I'm eating the steak and you guys are eating that slop with the mouse or whatever the hell his name is. And he's like, it's all chicken.
He's like, you want to buy some dead steaks?
So it was brought to this guy because what he was able to do with this was actually compare this note to 20 other examples of Hill and Cotter's notes and memos from the past. So he looked at the note that was supposedly written by them and then took 20 other examples and compared them. His end feeling about the whole thing was, quote, in my opinion, there is no compelling reason to regard any of these communications as fraudulent or to believe that any of them were written by anyone other than Hill and Cotter himself. This statement holds for the controversial presidential briefing memorandum of November 18th, 1952, as well as for the letters, both official and personal, end quote. Now, again, obviously doesn't mean that he did it, but another person who looked at it did come forward, obviously, and who compared it said it looked real enough to him. I don't
that's,
know,
see,
man.
That's good enough. I mean,
it's
for me.
Like, that's the thing, right? It's like it doesn't match like other government official things, but
there's
it also.
So many limbs you guys are out on right now.
You got me
like,
on the hot seat, dude.
Right.
You got
to see where this is going.
I'll take a shot.
It's not like these are okay. At least these are, the people who are reading them are not nobodies, like heads of CIA programs.
Right.
But they could also just be saying it's so disinformation. Who knows?
That's like a real problem, actually.
Actually, like, correct. Yes.
Like people who are like spies and stuff like that, like half of their job is just being like, are you lying to me? Like it sucks.
Yeah. So would you like to know, gentlemen, who is part of the MJ-12?
$100. I mean, 100%. Yes.
$100.
$100 at patreon.com/IlluminatiPod.
There is no $100 tier, but hey, man.
If you give us $100, we'll give you the list.
We'll say you're on the Majestic 12.
You're in the Majestic Baker's Dozen.
Yeah.
First is Rear Admiral Roscoe H. Hill and Cotter. No surprise there. First director of the CIA. Second, Dr. Vannevar Bush, chairman of the Joint Research and Development Board. Third, James V. Forrestal, first Secretary of Defense. General Nathan F. Twining, commander of the United States of America Air Force Air Material Command of Wright Field. And there was General Hoyt Vanderberg, chief of the Air Staff. Dr. Detlev Bronk, chairman of the National Research Council. Dr. Jerome Hunsake, chairman of the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics. Sidney Sowers, first executive secretary of the National Security Council. Gordon Gray, Assistant Secretary of the Army. Donald Menzel, Chairman, Department of Astronomy. Lloyd V. Berkner, Executive Security of Research and Development Board. Major General Robert M. Montague, Commanding Officer of the area that included the White Sands Proving Grounds, which is an area that UFOs popped over quite often. And the outlier among the list of America's top military, intelligence, and scientific communities is Donald Menzel, who was best known for three books in which he ridiculed UFOs and those who took them seriously. The poster boy for anti-UFO movement, but research by Friedman, though papers housed at Harvard revealed Menzel's involvement in high-level CIA and National Security Agency operations for many years, including work in the code-breaking field.
So he's an agent.
He is an agent for the CIA, but not with an official title.
I thought he's you were saying he was not a government employee, and I was like, what?
Well, he wasn't officially. He was in he's worked with them, though.
So he's not actually a government agent. He doesn't have
right,
a badge.
Correct. Correct. Okay. That's why he's kind of the stickler. He's the one that's kind of outlier amongst those. And that's your Majestic 12. That's them. They're very exciting people. Beyond that, it just kind of talks a little bit about the document and basically what the document boils down to. We're not going to really go through it and break it down too much because be a lot there. But basically, it just kind of describes the idea that what we talked about in episode two, there are bodies, the crash wreckage, and they were able to recover actual wreckage. More like talking about how they're going to kind of cover up what's been happening. There's actual.
And who wrote this?
This is supposedly Eisenhower's briefing. This is the MJ-12 document.
Written by Eisenhower?
Written by the head of MJ-12, Hillenkotter.
Hillenkotter? Okay.
Hillenkotter, written for Eisenhower.
Eisenhower upon his entry into the White House.
Correct. All about the crash and all that other stuff. It talks about the bodies that were laying out. In the document, it actually says that the bodies were actually laying out in the outside for a week. They weren't out there for just a night or two, like the stories that we got kind of say. Talking about that, how they desperately tried to reverse engineer the wreckage and tried to dissect bodies, that kind of stuff. The stuff that we kind of, you know, touched on a little bit. And that's really all it boils down to. Other than that, they just talk about at the end of the document, they just talk about how after that event, UFO activity ramped up and it's been at a higher level of activity than it ever has been before. And that's what the MJ-12 in the document is. That's the literal only physical evidence that we have that they might even exist if you even buy that it's not a hoax.
There's not any mention of the phrase Majestic 12 anywhere else?
Nowhere else. That's it. That's it. That's all we've have.
Damn.
And obviously people have gone wild. There's been documents out there that people claim are Majestic 12 documents, but there's been no way to prove it. Sometimes there's like little hidden away MJ-12 markers on some papers that people say they find. It's none of it is verifiable is the problem. And so you can't take any of it without a giant grain of salt.
I'm just imagining 12 of the cigarette smoking man all just like sitting around a table.
Right. Me too.
Like looking at each other and like not really saying anything. Yep. Very control-esque.
Evangelion, if you've ever watched that anime.
Yes. Yes.
The circle of like higher ups.
The big ass table. Yeah.
Yep. It's that kind of feeling. It's very, very bizarre. But supposedly they were formed in 1947 after Roswell and the crash. So we're going to talk a little bit now about some of the incidents that followed, some of the UFO sightings that happened. We're not going to go into a huge amount of detail because we just kind of want to get through them. And then we're going to wrap up with the theories, everything from the crazy that there actually were aliens all the way to Project Mogul, which people keep yelling about. And if you don't know what Project Mogul is, basically it's the excuse that it was still a balloon, but the balloon was back then used as a spying balloon. They had microphones attached to it.
I remember this, yes.
Yeah. And that's the official, I think, the official excuse now. But it also wouldn't explain a second crash, and it wouldn't explain the giant gouge in the earth that was on the ranch, I would think. But
the idea is that explains why they were so
big and why there was so much wreckage, and they were so, yeah, exactly, so antsy about it, which, again, it doesn't make sense.
Some kind of black op or something, right? It's like a spying op.
They were testing it. They weren't using it, like, officially yet. They were kind of testing it on us, on their own people, to see how it would work and all that other nonsense. There's also the theory that it was a Russian version of that balloon. But there's less evidence of that. And it's more believable that it's us testing things.
As in because found a Russian spy balloon on our soil.
Like the Russian spy balloon got like something happened to it and it got knocked out of the sky. And so we're trying to hide the fact that Russians got that far in with their spying devices, you know, and again, a lot of that can be believed, especially when you learn that there's an area, I guess, within the atmosphere, just kind of doing my research on that. What they were trying to do was get the balloon into a very specific point within the atmosphere where there's like a lot less interference and there's easier to hear and sound carries easier up there for one reason or another. So they can hear planes coming from way further away than they would if they were lower or higher within the atmosphere, something along those lines.
Okay. The one thing that always bugged me about the Russian angle is that when you think about the reaction of Russia to the U-2 spy plane being shot down, right? In Russia, they were like, we shot it down. We got your people, America.
Yeah, like, suck our dicks, bro. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like even though the idea that's being presented is always, well, Americans would freak out if they knew. I feel like if the government was like, send your best, Russia, we'll shoot it down every time. I feel like, wouldn't that be the thing that they would say if that's exactly what Russia
what's
did?
What's the thing called, though, when you're a two spies and you like, It's called like mental psyops, or you give them. I forget what the phrase is, but the phrase is like you don't directly call out another spy, but you like do shit to like fuck with them.
I get that, but it seems to me that it's strange that there's two totally opposite reactions.
I don't know. It seems weird. It seems weird that we wouldn't be big dick in it. You know what I mean? I get it.
because we do it for everything else.
But we might have done it everything in secret. Else. You know what I mean? We might have done it like in secret. We might have like, you know, some dude in Russia like maybe like went to his bedroom and found like a little Uncle Sam figurine standing on the desk in his house, and he's like, and that's like all that happened, you know?
For everything else during that period, there's so much big dicking going around. That's why it's the Cold War. Right. It was just, everyone was like, what are you going to do, Russia? Come on. That's the whole point. It's very strange. Although, with that said, there's been plenty of, you know, things that have come out where it's like, oh, yeah, we were about 6 minutes away from blowing up the Earth. Like that kind of stuff. So, who knows?
I mean, there was that event that happened during that time, too, where there was all, because we have, again, this is something I only recently learned about, but there's the, we have missile sites all along the border of Canada, like all our nuclear missiles. And in this Cold War time, there's a, like, you can follow, the paper trails are there. They're not hiding it at all. But there was a UFO incident where an UFO went over all of the missile sites and even fucked with some of them. Like got into the computers and like there's like a flashing of lights and all their computer systems went nuts for a few seconds and then it moved on and it would do that a bunch. And it also happened in Russia, which you can also were able to get like the papers for. And they had UFOs where they said the ship looked like it was a solid ship and then it broke apart into a bunch of little ships and did a bunch of things and it was fucking with their launch codes. And then it put itself back together and then fucking took off and it went to all their nuclear sites.
It makes one wonder, you know, even though I don't believe it, it's a fun theory. The idea that, well, we haven't actually set off a nuke on someone since 1945. Mind you, we've set off plenty of nukes like in the ocean and tested them.
Yeah,
but like the idea that we haven't killed anyone with it. Maybe the aliens are telling us not to.
It's a fun theory. Yeah, it's just like them showing up and just being like, we can do whatever the fuck we want to your most powerful weapon.
Yeah, mind you, we create even better, more deadly versions of them. So the aliens really aren't doing their job, but whatever.
No, they're probably like, don't kill you. You're our food source. Please don't kill each other.
Yeah, just make weapons that are like 18,000 times more powerful than that first bomb, though. And it'll be fine.
Yeah, go for it. Make nitrogen bombs, fine. It's all good. Just don't use them. It's all good. Don't worry about it. All right, so let's move on a little bit to some, what we're going to, there's a bunch of other incidents that happened that we could talk, like really dive into, but I just want to stick to UFO incidents that were specifically recorded during space travel and spacecraft that happened 50s, 60s, or 60s rather, and up, that kind of like really took off, starting with May 16th in 1963. The crew was a man by the name of Cooper for the Mercury, and this was over Hawaii. He ended up picking up voices on a special frequency, speaking in a language later examined on tape and found to belong to no known Earth language. Passing over Perth, Australia, they saw large UFOs also observed by checking station on Earth. So being seen by two different angles and two different people. That's that. Gemini 4, June 3rd, 1964. McDivitt and White over Hawaii almost collided with a silver cylinder. Oval with luminous trails, and they actually photographed it. You can go check this out as well. December 4th, 1965, Gemini 7, Borman and Lowell with the crew, and they took pictures of enormous UFOs with propulsion systems following the capsule they were in. Gemini 9, June 3rd, 1966, Stafford and Cernan were the crew. The capsule took off and was accompanied by many UFOs seen by the ground station of radar observation. Later, a huge object on not a planet or planetoid was observed. Gemini 11, September 12th, 1966. Conrad and Gordon were the crew, and long objects sighted over Madagascar were seen. NASA said it was Soviet Proton 3, but later was 350 miles away at the time of sighting. So they claimed it was a Soviet Proton 3, but it was determined that was not true. Apollo 8.
That is crazy.
I know. It's nuts. Apollo 8, 21st of December, 1968. Borman, Lovell, and Anders. They cited a disc-shaped UFOs as capsules as the capsule circled the moon. They reported, quote, "We have been informed that Santa Claus does exist," end quote. They also picked up unidentifiable language on a space frequency radio.
What? Oh. Is there audio of that?
I don't know. I didn't see any.
Shouldn't just, there be?
Is there any more description
of imagine. That? Again, that's so if you want to go deeper, it's Apollo 8.
Apollo 8?
Apollo 8, December 1st, 1968. Unidentified language on space frequency radio. While you're looking that up, Apollo 10, from the 8th to the 26th of May, 1969, the crew were Stafford, Young, and Cernan. They all sighted two UFOs following the capsule during orbit of the moon and their homeward flight. So a lot of just, so far, it's just a lot of them, like, once we get out there and we're, like, exploring, just a lot of them tailing us, following us, almost just kind of watching what we do.
Hmm.
Apollo 12, November 14th, 1969. Conrad, Gordon, and Bean this time around. And the observatories on Earth had observed the capsule being accompanied by two brilliantly light lit UFOs near the moon. Then, when near Earth before landing, a large UFO with red lights was seen. Apollo 17, December 7th through the 19th of 1972. Cernan, Evans, and Schmidt. They saw UFOs near Earth, close to the moon, and in between on their journeys. And that's the official, that's it for the official sightings between the 60s and the early 70s.
I must not be keyed in on the conspiracy side of Google, because I typed in everything for Apollo 8 and nothing was even related to alien voices. It's literally like the NASA page for Apollo 8, the Airspace Magazine page for Apollo 8, the wiki for Apollo 8, Amazon, like,
did you buy put in the quote, story we have Apollo been 8. Informed that Santa Claus does exist. Did that bring anything up?
Apollo 10 alien music. The Apollo 8 mission had a Christmas Eve message that you can listen to, but I don't think it has the alien language on it.
Okay.
But I don't, I don't think there's a recording of it.
Yeah, probably. I would assume not. Otherwise, it'd be everywhere. Houston, Apollo 8, please be informed there is a Santa Claus.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, that's the quote.
Yeah, I see that it's here, but I don't see any sort of like record of it. I have basically what you have.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's nuts. Even though, even without it, though, there's still so much going on. There.
Okay, so apparently in Apollo 8, Lovell said, "Please be informed there is a Santa Claus," according to the transcript. And the conspiracy is that I guess he already had talked with ground through Christmas Eve, and people are like, why did he say that? What prompted him to say that? What was that, a code? And everyone's like, I think he was just saying, like, there's a Merry Santa because it's Christmas.
Yeah.
And he was trying to like do a thing for kids. I think
just, like, people were all watching it, but I only see that there was this quote. Yeah. But I don't,
I can't find anything.
And then a lot of interference. And apparently, like, even after that Christmas message, there was like a thing where they like left the mic on a little longer and there's a transcript of it, but it's not anything weird. There's no like recordings of space.
Right. Exactly.
Damn.
And it is from this point on, however, that the government does officially start investigating UFOs heavily from the crash of 1947. It's when the first studies started happening. And from that point on, there's going to be a history of the government starting and closing UFO programs, only to reopen a new one under a different name, under a different person. And, you know, Project Blue Book, ATIP, all that other stuff.
Sure.
And just says this is kind of where it all starts. So that leaves us with, well, then what the hell was the Roswell crash? What are the theories out there that the Roswell crash were? And we're going to talk about those right now, and that will put a bow on Roswell. So first is the idea of the cover-up. Was not, in my opinion, it wasn't a weather balloon. Even if it was a testing, like, spy balloon that we were working on, There's just no way.
The reaction is too much. Like, yep, regardless exactly. of what you say, there's no way they flew a weather balloon to Washington, D.C.
Exactly. So what do we have? Well, at this point in time, all classified documents, as we all know, are declassified within 20, 30, or 40 years, thanks to, you know, the way our government now works. Therefore, any documents relating to New Mexico crashes, if they existed at all, would now be fully available. Unfortunately, there's really nothing about the Roswell crash that we don't already have in our hands.
Sure.
There's no general requirement for automatic declassification of all documents. For an example, in 1990, the Truman Library reviewed half of its files of the CIA's Psychological Strategy Board. Half of the material could not be declassified for national security reasons, even though all of it dated pre-1953, therefore putting it within the range that it should be automatically declassified. It would be impossible to keep crashes a secret, though, as a lot of people would have been kind of knowing bits and pieces of the story. This is another reason people don't really believe that it was really aliens. Too many people, have you heard the theory, you know, the conspiracy theory where it doesn't really work if hundreds of people know, because at that point, somebody's going to leak it to somebody.
Right.
And therefore, it would just fall apart. I forget the name of that theory. There's a name for that specifically.
It's just, I mean, it sounds like common sense to me.
Right. Like, yeah. Right. It also makes a lot of common sense. Therefore, if there were so many hundreds of people involved with these crash cover-ups, why did it never, ever leak? And only we have these small tidbits of what was going on.
Like, people then are leaking, like, The Masked Singer. You know they're going to leak, like, an alien body.
Yeah.
Especially something so world-changing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to see, like, how did people keep that quiet? Obviously, the government was threatening people's lives to some degree, but even then. Then there's a Freedom of Information Act that has clearly made it possible for any citizens to get their hands on any document the federal agencies have responded to. The federal agencies also have a requirement to respond to all requests. So if any crash-related documents ever existed, would they not have already been dug into by the general public at this point, desperately trying to get their hands on them? I mean, yeah, it makes sense.
Unless they destroyed them. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, unless they destroyed them, fair enough.
Yeah.
And I mean, I still don't necessarily not believe they don't have some sort of wreckage of some sort. Again, though, I'd err on the side that they just don't know what the fuck it is.
Right.
And they don't really, there's no, like, they're not bringing it to, you know, Sergeant Gleeper down in the tunnels where the MJ-12 deal with the gray higher ups.
I mean, I don't know what it is either, but I don't think it's what they say it is.
Right. So, explanations. The first one we're going to talk about is the American Test Rocket explanation. Loads of people have suggested that this was that all that was found at the Foster Ranch was the remains of one of the captured German-built V-2 unguided ballistic missiles known to have been test-fired from the White Sands Proving Grounds, which is an area UFOs have been seen over a bunch, less than 100 miles southwest of Corona, where the crash happened. The bodies that this is the second crash we're speaking of specifically. The bodies were those of rhesus monkeys in advanced stages of decomposition from environmental exposure. So the bodies that these people, 12 people kind of wandered in and all of them said there were bodies there. Their explanation is they were just like leftover corpses being observed out in decomposition as we do even nowadays. And they just used them as kind of like fodder for the
rocket.
Why
would they be there?
They filled the rocket with them, I guess, just like a test rocket to put bodies in, maybe for the weight purposes of testing how heavy they could keep the rocket without putting live people in there and blowing them up.
They could just use sand instead of monkeys. Surely.
Sure. I mean,
they blasted monkeys to space.
That's true.
Spoilers, they left them up there. The monkeys didn't come back down.
That's
true. The astronaut dogs, they didn't like land and get a parade.
I've read Forrest Gump. Okay. I get it.
Forrest Gump came back down when he went to space.
He did, but there was a monkey with him. The movie is different than the book.
Well, there's a bunch of reasons that this doesn't really fully fit the puzzle piece anyway. Monkeys were not. For one of the people that we talked about heavily throughout the series, Jesse Marcel, who had was within the military, also had years of experience in the Army Air Force intelligence. He would have had a load of knowledge of different types of common and uncommon air and space devices, and you would think he would have recognized what was on the ground before him in this crash. Also, if it had been some sort of German test ballistic missile that they'd gotten their hands on, there would have also likely been some sort of parts, numbers, identification on the pieces of the wreckage, something that would have made shown that it was manufactured somewhere.
Well, there was. It was just written in like purple alien laser ink. Yeah.
Yeah, it was written in red laser ink. Exactly. You know, it makes no sense. Also, if you were to believe the description of the bodies that we got from those who said they saw them, they sound nothing like monkeys. The big heads, one crouching in the background, one trying to communicate.
Tentacles.
Thin arms.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any goddamn sense. So it doesn't fit that. And then obviously the last is that if this theory is true, why, if it was like a simple missile crash, was it treated with such insane secrecy? Why did the military come out? Why were there life threats against everybody who fucking saw the thing? Why was the newspaper the next morning immediately shouting about UFOs?
Sell copies?
You think so? Do you buy that it was a rocket? A US rocket?
I buy that the government would cover that up more than a Russian something or other.
It could have been. I think so.
The failure of a United States thing, they'd cover up more than like the successful shooting down of a Russian anything.
I was under the understanding that Project Mogul was like testing gear to spy on Russians. No? Because I could totally see them like being like, nope, 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 nope. Like if it was just like
Project Mogul is the official explanation now. Like that is the official one, and the one that most people who don't believe it's anything other than something like earthly, that's what people pretty much accept at this point.
I mean, like if they were just like, oh, it was a rocket that we were testing, like what is the downside of that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm with you.
I guess I mean, like the animal question, like the like ethics of like crashing a bunch of monkeys into the ground. But yeah. Like, I don't feel like that's what the government was there to cover up. And why would you send the body of a rhesus monkey to Washington, D.C.?
Here's a quick rundown. Project Mogul was a top secret project by the U.S. Army Air Forces. This is just a Wikipedia, everybody. Involving microphones flown on high altitude balloons whose primary purpose was long distance detection of sound waves generated by Soviet atomic bomb tests. The project was carried out from 1947 until early 1949. It was a classified portion of an unclassified project by New York University atmospheric researchers. The project was moderately successful, but was very expensive and was superseded by a network of seismic detectors and air sampling for fallout, which was cheaper, more reliable, and easier to deploy.
They literally just had like a big ass ear in the sky. Like,
yeah, they were just listening. Yeah,
that's hilarious.
This is the basically they searched deep a sound channel in the oceans and theorized that a similar sound channel existed in the upper atmosphere, a certain height where the air pressure and temperature result in minimal speed of sound, so that sound waves would propagate and stay in that channel due to refraction. Basically, long distance listening.
Love that.
That's it. So that's what people mostly buy is what that was now, because it fits the balloon theory, but the balloon was way bigger, had super secret gear on it. And no common person or even regular kind of military type would know what they're looking at.
I still don't understand. Like, unless it was like,
there's still bits that don't make sense in the story.
I'm just saying, like, in Project Mogul, like, if that's what their official explanation is, like, it wasn't like a guy in a basket that could like snipe people in Russia. You know what I mean?
No,
it wasn't
no.
Some crazy thing. Like, us being like, we want to know when Russia sets off a nuke. That's not like insanely classified sounding information to me. I don't know. Like, it doesn't seem it deserves that level of discretion.
But the concept, if I understand this correctly, is that we can just sit up in above the US and listen to Russia.
Yep. Listen for their sound.
Just specifically to them blowing up nukes, though. It's not like you can hear like Putin taking a shit in his house, like from a microphone over Roswell, New Mexico.
Sure. I just wonder if maybe they were worried that Russia didn't have that technology. So them knowing it could exist would send them down the path of like, we have to work on it now.
Yeah.
I guess it just doesn't seem, I don't see the government being like, we got to hide this.
I do.
Well, what if it was a Japanese bomb carrying balloon?
Oh, I heard about these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, from November 1944 all the way through April of 1945, the Japanese launched more than 9,000 crude gas-filled balloons, each carrying 50 to 75 pounds of incendiary or high-explosive bombs. As many as 1,000 of them may have ridden the prevailing winds all the way to North America. Damage from them was limited to a few small fires and the deaths of 6 people on an outing who came across one of them in the woods.
Can you imagine?
I mean, it would explain the fireball in the sky that came crashing down the night before.
It seems a little bit inland, and it seems like a year or two too late, right?
Right.
Isn't it 47 we're talking about?
Yeah, well, this was 1944 to 1945.
Right,
and
but
so,
when was the crash?
The event happened in 40. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
after the war was over?
Just kind of drifted across.
Yeah.
Just been in the air for a while. The balloons themselves were 33 feet in diameter, made of laminated paper and rubberized silk, and carried a payload of more than 300 pounds, most of which was the mechanism that controlled the balloon's altitude as it drifted. From a secrecy perspective, this one kind of makes sense, as the landings of these balloons were kept secret to obscure any information of their effectiveness getting back to the Japanese. However, there is, of course, evidence that does not support this. As Alex brought up, the last launch of one of these balloons was in April of 1945. The odds of it still being in the air for over 2 years only to explode and leave debris all over the Foster Ranch is really goddamn low.
It's crazy. It's like it's like 1,000 miles inland.
Moreover, none of the materials match what people got in the crash. It doesn't make any sense. And the balloon crafts had not been a matter of national security at that point in time. So why the fuck did the army freak out?
That's what I'm saying. Like, if it was a Japanese weapon, they wouldn't be like, we got to hide this. I'm just saying.
It doesn't make any sense.
And I still wonder about the dingles and the doodads and the symbols, you know, like the things people wrote down.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like emojis. Right? Yeah, it doesn't really look like they wrote down kanji or anything. It looks like emojis. And I don't know. That's just weird. That's one of the things.
Even more proof that aliens are future humans, dude.
And if I was a Japanese, like, military person, and I was sending my, like, secret balloon over the ocean, I wouldn't use, like, a language that only we use on this earth. Like, the, like, smoking gun of, like, kanji on a fucking military, like, secret craft. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's why I don't believe it either. I'm going to skip the weather balloon one. Do we dive into the weather balloon theory?
Is there anything in there about why anybody would give that much of a shit about a weather balloon?
Well, because aspects of what we were given as evidence obviously match parts of a balloon, but the materials from the debris field showed properties unlike anything seen before. The rancher said he had seen crashed weather balloons before. Other people in the military who claimed to have seen the crash would have recognized what a weather balloon looks like. Brazel, for instance, had seen a bunch of weather balloons in his time in the military. It just doesn't make any sense.
Is there any sort of general security breach?
Yeah.
Involved,
security, like, breach doesn't make
it's
sense.
It's just data collection, it's just like, right?
It doesn't
it's
make any sense. Yeah. Yeah.
There's just so many versions of, like, examples of crashed weather balloons.
Yep.
That for people to mistake one, it just doesn't make sense.
It worked in the 40s when you couldn't jump on the internet and find pictures real easy, and you didn't know, the common person didn't know what it looked like.
Swamp gas. Yeah.
But even then, people get the concept of balloons.
Oh, sure. For sure.
Blimps, Zeppelins. Just looks like a big ass balloon.
Yeah.
Well, what if instead it was actually an American secret weapon?
Okay.
Since Roswell at the time was known for its military base, it wouldn't be such a far stretch to think that what crashed on Foster Ranch was some sort of military secret weapon in its development stages.
I believe that.
This would also explain why Mac Brazel of the military couldn't identify it, as it was in high levels of secrecy. Now, there's obviously a bunch of evidence against it. What was secret in 1947 is no longer secret today. If it was some sort of new military weapon or craft, then it would have been either been put into production or sent to the scrap heap. Either way, we would have there'd been no need for secrecy anymore, and we know what the hell it was. Even if it had been totally successful, it would be long since obsolete today as well.
Yeah, in the same way that eventually the government was like, Project Mogul. Like, would they just be like,
we actually have a list as well of planes we know were being tested at the time that weren't public at the time. The Bell XS-1 rocket plane, which was being developed by the famed X-1 Chuck Yeager when he became the first man to fly faster than the speed of sound.
First off, if you are an 80s, 90s kid, you played Chuck Yeager. Airplane Sims religiously.
That
was one of the few games you could get. Chuck Yeager, man, that was the shit.
I had a Genesis,
over to a friend's house,
Air
and
combat?
We put on like... the whole gear, and we get in our little.
Oh, like, your friend had their like a whole setup.
Yeah, we get in our like cockpit,
wrinkly face on the title screen.
Oh my god! Yeah, we'd fly in like graphics that today would be comically bad.
It looks like Super Nintendo.
We were just like, yeah, we're playing. And it wasn't anything like you're in a dogfight or anything. It's literally just like, all right, and now you're gonna push the throttle forward and.
It literally just looks like flying airplanes with like.
Yes, like, that's what it was. It was like, are you just a
with like
kid
John
at home?
Madden, Jimmy Carter?
That's what it is.
Yeah,
yeah. We thought it was the coolest shit.
Well, it wasn't that. the other planes we were testing were the XB-35, the XB-26, the XF-86 Sabre, the D-55, 558i Skystreak. All
of
these were being tested.
Fairly like airplanes too, right?
Yeah, they all look like airplanes, and none of them were being flown around the New Mexico area. Which then puts us, okay, well, what if it was a Soviet secret weapon? Which we've kind of already talked about a little bit. But if it was, it doesn't make much sense for an incredibly secret and restrictive project to test fly over enemy territory that deep down in the middle of the United States.
1,000 miles inland, like over a military base. Why would you ever do that?
just to get shot down, captured, and reverse engineered by us. And as Jesse said too, you feel like you'd be like, all right, they're here. Like, why would you not tell everybody and be super pumped about it?
It is crazy to think that this could remain a secret for so long and be such a mystery, because the concept of everything we're talking about during this time period, all these planes, all these things, rockets in general, the space race was straight up. We and Russia took Nazi scientists and brought them back, recruited them to our sides. And that is a known fact today. So the idea that we were like, hey, we know you were Nazis and you did some crazy stuff, but guess what? We need your rocket technology and you're the only people who know how to do it. So come on back, join us. That's a known story. Yep. It's real. Everyone knows Operation Paperclip. Like, it's a real thing. To think that that is out in the open and this is not makes it seem like this is something way weirder.
Yeah, I don't, it's, and I want to know, but... Gentlemen, that's where we have to leave Roswell. That's
it. Oh, my God.
That's
everything. Back to the mothership.
That's it. Back to the Chilluminati mothership. We don't walk away with an answer. You know, I personally, I'm curious what you all personally think. But for me, like I said at the top of the episode, I firmly stand in the, if it is aliens, I truly believe the government is as clueless as we are, with the exception of they might have a little bit more video evidence or whatnot. And Roswell certainly wasn't a weather balloon. And it might have been aliens. It might have been Project Mogul. It might have been a couple of things, but I don't know if we'll ever know.
I don't think there is
enough. I want it to be aliens.
Yeah, I don't think there's enough evidence to be like, here is what it is.
Yeah, like, no way.
Specifically. But I do think that this, I keep coming back to Roswell, and I think, and I never talk shit on Roswell, because I feel like it is clear to me at the very least that the reaction to what went down there was not like reasonable for any of the explanations that the government has given over the years. Even Project Mogul, like, it's a Russian, it's a microphone to listen for nukes that you would deploy on your own soil. Like, I just don't see it being like something that we need to fly to Washington right away. I don't see the need for it to be like furniture. Like, I just don't see any of that stuff.
It all going back to DC, and that's there's just parts of the story that just blow my mind.
That's also the weird part, is if it is something of an out of this world nature, you wouldn't take it to the heart of the government.
No,
you wouldn't do that.
The president is not the first guy who gets to see like the alien bodies. Yeah.
There's no one in the Pentagon or whatever that needs, like, they would travel to the middle of nowhere base to look at it rather than be like, sure, bring the aliens here. That doesn't make any sense either.
Like, what if they had like a fucking virus? Like, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly. Yeah.
Well, remember, if you're to believe the autopsy reports, the corpse smelled so bad that everybody was vomiting.
So I'm saying, like, why would you like then pack that up and take it to center?
Yeah. Why would you bring that over to the government? It's weird.
It doesn't
man.
Make sense.
It's weird, but with Roswell done and Skinwalker done, I feel like now for everybody who's kind of new to this world of like weird conspiracies and aliens and supernatural. Oh, you've got your starter package.
Yeah.
You're like,
all these years later, you are inducted into the UFO, like,
you're a UFO researcher now, too.
Yeah. We're all UFO researchers. You can add that to your lower third on any piece of media that you're on. On the news.
UFO researcher.
Tell them on the news. If you get interviewed for any reason on the news, tell them you're a UFO researcher.
Yeah, there's like a crazy killer near you in your neighborhood. When they interview you and you're like, he seems so nice, just have it say UFO researcher underneath.
Yeah. Do you remember that freaking clip of that guy who like realizes that he got caught for murder on like because he's being interviewed by the news?
Yes, I do.
That is one of the best. Somebody's going to ask me for that on Reddit later. I'm sure that if you do, I will help you find it. But God, it's so insane.
That is a classic video.
Man, don't you wish we could just like talk about stuff for like 15 more minutes or so?
I kind of do. Is there a way we could do that?
Well, you know what, Mathis? If you head over to patreon.com/chaluminatipod, right
for
here,
shame.
Right
I
now,
I didn't even see that coming.
We got another mini-sode for you right now. We got some hot stuff. I got some good stuff. I've been doing research. Spoilers, the next episode, I'm going to do it. I have an idea for like a fun little anthology episode that I can do that's recurring. So I have some stories that like didn't make the cut, and I'm going to talk about one today. So get on over there.
I'm excited. Yeah, check it out. And like I said, too, $20 tier and above, starting next month, you get an exclusive little poster, digital art poster. You do what you want with it. Just if it's naughty stuff, don't ever tell us.
What?
That's all.
Well, they're paying. Know. They're paying. I mean, hint at it, but don't say exactly what it is and don't post any pics.
Keep it subtle. Keep it flirty. Keep it teasy.
Yeah.
What? I don't want to know.
Keep it fresh. Keep it nice. Schlorp it out. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Schlorp it out, and maybe the Boston Bean Boy will bless you with his presence later on. We're going to go.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want to tweet at us, you can find me at Mathis Games and or at the show at Chaluminati Pod. I'm done chilling for you boys. Where can people find you? You just do it yourself. We'll start with Jesse. What social media thing do you want to pimp at the end of this episode?
I want to discuss, not pimp. I want to send you all to just, you know what? Go to youtube.com/Jesse Cox.
That's a good website.
Great
it's
stuff.
It's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's a good website. I show up there a lot. It's a great place.
Where can people find you, Alex?
You know what? I'm going to take this opportunity to shill something that's coming back in a big way. If you like to listen to Jesse and I talk about things that we definitely read for sure, head on over to the Star Wars New Canon Book Club podcast, which is back in production. And is us, you know, going deep into the Star Wars canon, you know, reading some books, some comics, some, you know, average TV, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Head on over there and you can get mad at Star Wars and fall in love with Star Wars all over again with me and Davis.
If you ever want multiple episodes of Alex and Davis having the same conversation,
if you want to see a man on an emotional roller coaster so fragile that any mention of like key scenes will send him right back to 2017, head over to the Star Wars New Canon Book Club.
And on that, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with some more Chaluminati podcast. I appreciate you letting me take you on the Roswell journey, gentlemen.
Excellent.
And listeners.
Had a great
time. We'll see you next time.
Peace out.
Bye.
Anyway, me and my wife were sitting outside indulging on our porch one night, enjoying ourselves. I needed to go to the bathroom, so I stepped back inside, and after a few moments, I hear my wife go, "Holy shit, get out of here." So I quickly dash back outside, and she's looking up at the sky in awe. I look up too, and there's a perfect line of dozen lights traveling across the sky.